This is AM Studios Podcast, where we curate all the knowledge, resources, and power you need to help you create your business in entertainment, podcasting, music, tech, art, fashion, and more. Every week, we share everything we've learned at AM from the greatest minds in the business. Let's go.
The question is, like, you know, you paid some money, there's like a thing, you don't need to pay me any money, like right now, there's something, it's a loose agreement of some sort that you, that actually is not even in writing, it's probably not even in writing. Even in the case, this example goes even further to say that money changed hands beyond that. Let me get through this, okay, because that is a very, very important part, which is the next phase, okay, because we dealt with the basics of what copyrights there were, who the creators are of the copyrights, who are the owners of the copyrights. I'm now dealing with where the money is coming from so that you understand exactly that thing. And the next part of this is we're gonna talk about the agreements. Okay. How much time do I have? Nosisi, what's the time? It's 4 o'clock, and how long am I supposed to go for? Okay, are we good? So are we good, eh? Nobody needs to go anything. Okay, I would say we're about 5% of the way, no jokes. I would say we're almost halfway of in terms of this thing. And then next week you're gonna come back and we're gonna start again from the beginning, and then you're gonna have one more little light bulb moment. Okay, so let's go. Let me just track back to where we were at. Mondly earned the royalties from that thing. In the case of Zahara, who sang Loliwe, she is a part composer, and so is like MJX on, let's say, Loliwe, okay? So if somebody else goes and does a cover of that, in that instance, Sahara would earn royalties from somebody else's performance, but not because she's the original artist, it's because she was also the person who creates the idea. You know what I mean? And that's where the magic of being a singer-songwriter or being somebody that creates your work, creates the work that you perform. That's where that magic comes from, or magic is created, you know. And also, I wasn't saying that Mafiki Zulu is not creative. I mean, they write fucking hundreds of their own songs. It's just in this one instance, it's a good example of, you know, Kozekuse guy writing this specific song for them, you know. And I also don't know if that's exactly true. It might be a Spotify mistake, but that's just what it says on Spotify. So, you can earn royalties from your song being sold, and then also, in exactly the same way that recording artists and record labels get royalties, needle time royalties from Sampra, the composers and the publishers that represent them get what we call performance royalties from Samro. Okay? Sampra and Samro. Metro FM pays a license fee to Sampra, they pay another license fee to Samro for the opportunity to be allowed to play a track on radio, okay? So they have got the right to play the sound recording on radio, and for that, the owners of the people that are created the sound recording get royalties, but they also, by playing it on radio, they've also broadcast in public the copyright and the musical work. They've broadcast Ngeke Balunge that is maybe owned by Kalawa and performed by Mafiki Zulu, but they've also broadcast the musical work that is owned by Mondly and whoever publishes Mondly. Okay, and now Mondly, as a member of Samro, in exactly the same way that they've paid Sampra, they've paid Samro, and Samro is now going to pay Mondly a portion of that by way of what we call performance royalties. Okay, so when you earn from the sales, it's called mechanical royalties. When you earn as a composer. When your work is broadcast in public, on radio and television, you would earn from Samro, okay, and that's called a performance royalty, okay, which is a weird name because the needle time royalties feels like it should be called performance royalties, but it's not. Performance royalties is for composers, and needle time royalties is for record labels and recording artists. Okay, we're cool with that. As an aside, I don't want to get too deep into this. Sampra only pays for broadcast on radio. Samro only pays for broadcast on radio and television. Okay. And just out of interest's sake, the reason for that is that There's no sound recording that ever comes out of a television. Whatever comes out of a television is what we call the copyright and the cinematographical work, not the sound recording. So even if your song is in a movie or in a film, you are if you've ever heard of a sync license, synchronization license, that is what we're talking about. You are giving the license to somebody else to synchronize your copyright with their copyright, and the output on television is a copyright in the cinematographical work. Sampra only pays to the owners of the sound recording. So you don't, that's why Needle Time royalties is only paid for radio broadcasts, because the sound recording is played on broadcasts. But when a movie or a film is played, there's no sound recording. There is a musical work. The musical work travels. The same way that a musical work travels with a sound recording, a musical literary work can travel with the cinematographical work as well. It hops on both of them. But yeah.
Just a quick question. If I'm commissioned to make an intro sequence for Generations, for instance,
yes.
So I've created it, they've paid me to make the song, do I get paid a royalty fee each time Generation comes on TV? Same with like an advert or whatever. Do I get paid a royalty fee outside of the amount that I was paid for to create the song?
Yeah, so the same thing applies as like what I'm going to tell you just now, is that when you go to the basics of it, there were two copyrights that were created. In the Generations theme song, there were two copyrights that were originally created. The first one was the sound recording, and the second one was the musical work. The sound recording is actually owned by Generations because they paid it. Literally, they made the arrangements. The law says whoever made the arrangements for the sound recording owns the copyright of the sound recording. So whoever did it, the production company, owns the sound recording of that, okay? And by extension, now they've synchronized that into their movie, so they own the sound recording, okay? But you can never be commissioned out of your composition. The law, it's a very, very tricky way, I've been through this with like a number of lawyers. You can't commission somebody out of their out of their ownership of the musical and literary work. I'm actually going through this with a big international company right now, where they've also agreed that the writer will always be protected. The writer has always got to be credited. The writer will always own. So the royalties that you would earn. So firstly, you would get paid the money that gets paid there would be firstly to create the sound recording, okay, and that would be what you would like your production fee. So if you're gonna, I'm gonna hire session musicians and I'm gonna hire this, and my producer's fee is this, and X and X and X. There's real costs that are involved in the creation of a sound recording, and that would be a part of it. And then you might add a fee for composing to that as well, okay, because you're using your time to compose. But that's, I mean, this is all up to your business. But on top of that, every time your musical work, which is what you've created, goes out, SABC, where's Generations now? That goes out, they pay, say SABC One pays a license fee to Samro, and every time, for every second that your thing is paid, you should earn from Samro for your composition. Does that make sense? Okay, so you've got mechanical and performance royalties, okay? So if you are involved in the sound recording, you get Needle Time royalties. If you're involved in the musical and literary work, you get performance and mechanical royalties, okay? In exactly the same way that someone can license their sound recording, okay, it is not possible to license a sound recording without the license of the musical and literary work to be licensed as well, okay? Make sense? You can't. It's not possible. If I wrote Kusheshe and BMW comes and they want that recording, Family Tree will license it. But then also whoever owns the copyright of the musical literary works, probably Casper and somebody else and whoever their publishers are, would also have to issue a license. And that license is normally done 50-50. So if you're going to license a work like you were saying earlier on, you are essentially, if you own the sound recording and you own the composite and you own the musical work, you would then license it out. And if you earn 100 rand 50 Rand usually gets paid to this person, and 50 Rand gets paid to the publishers and the composers, and 50 Rand gets paid to the record label. That's generally how that works. It's not cast in stone. There's no law that says it has to be 50-50, but that's industry practice. And in the case of a commissioned work, that work would come with you assigning the license to Generations, which would be it would be part of the contract that would be in perpetuity. Generations, those production companies with television things will never say like we'll do this for a year or we'll do it for 5 years. You know, it'll be in perpetuity that they will expect that license, and that's why in an ideal world you would be able to charge for that. In South Africa, it's difficult. It's different based on who the production company is, what channel it is, what the budget is, and stuff like that. I mean, there are times when you would make a decision saying, I will license the theme song for a show that I know is going to go out every single week on the biggest channel in prime time, and I will happily do that for 20 grand because I know that it's going to result in, let's say, 50 grand a year or 100,000 rand a year. Whatever. I mean, I don't know what the numbers would be, but you know, so you would kind of make an informed decision, you know, on that. But that's tricky because you don't even know if you're going to get the money from SAMRO for that, which is what I spoke about earlier on. Okay, so we've done. If you're involved in the sound recording, there's certain money you can earn, and if you're involved in the musical literary work, there are certain things that you can. There's certain money that you can earn as well. Okay, now remember when I said right at the beginning, I said if you chase your royalties, everything else. If you follow all the steps for royalties, you will. Everything else will kind of fall into place, okay? And I think maybe you can understand here is that to get to the royalty, to get your royalties, all the steps that you would have followed to get to the royalties, you would have ticked off all the other boxes for everything else already. You know what I mean? And because the royalties is like the what's it? It's like advanced level. You know, it's like if you're going from intermediate to expert to advanced. You know, the royalty game is the advanced one, especially in South Africa, because it's like it's every Capasso, SAMRO, and SAMPRA come with completely different like minefields. You know, in my own experience, like I bought a landline so that I could phone SAMRO. Like I was so frustrated, and if any of you have been through the SAMRO experience, like. I've got so much stuff that I've created that I need to get right, and I was getting so frustrated with like phone dropped calls, long waits on the customer services thing, you know, like where I'm trying to phone from where my computer is has crap reception, so I've got to go out to the garden, then I've got to run back for my relation number, I've got to run out for reception. So like I bought a landline, I like invested in a landline at my place purely so that I can phone SAMRO. You know, and I mean the SAMRO example for me is like a really good one because I would highly recommend as well that I don't think it's possible to get royalties from SAMRO without developing a relationship through the phone with them. Like I don't know how else to say it. Like for me, it's like every single day it's either Daisy, Untiretsi, Nokaya, or Bobo that I speak to. I know them by their voice. I know that there are four people in the customer service department. Once they answer, they don't have to say hello, Nokaya speaking. I can tell you who it is. I say it's James, you know, it's James from Wabi Music, da 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 da. And I literally am on the phone with them every single day. And I resolve every single day to never lose my shit with them. Like, and some of the stuff that happens at SAMRO is so unbelievably ridiculous. The you know, that may never make it onto TV. Okay, I do not give consent for that to make it out. Okay, but yeah, there are challenges that we face in South Africa, and you can either sit complaining about them, which is what most of us do. Okay, and complain away, but at the same time, there is only one way to fix it in South Africa. To earn your royalties as a composer, you have to phone SAMRO. It is not possible to do it through email. It's not possible to get your royalties through the portal at SAMRO. I can I'm 100% convinced that the only way that you can get your money through the portal is if every work that you're involved in, you are the only composer and the only publisher. It is my position that that is the only way that you can earn the correct amount of royalties, because if you are collaborating with somebody else, the portal is so confusing that it's not possible that you will submit the same notification as somebody else. That is my position, that you can't submit a correct notification to the portal if there are more than one person. It is possible if you do it manually through email and on the phone, where you're double checking everything every single time, and it is 50 times more work. But like, I can tell you from personal experience that I'm starting to get confident that exactly what I'm owed is what's getting paid to me by doing that. Yeah. So let us move on. Yeah, we had that, eh? Great. So now that you know your role, okay, so I'm sure your mind is spinning about every time you've been on a track, and now you're suddenly starting to realize, like, flip, I wasn't actually just a featured artist. I was a featured artist, and I was the lyricist, and I did some of the melody, so I was, like, part of the musical work and the literary work, and I was the featured artist, you know, and they said we should go 50-50. What does that mean? Did they mean 50-50 on the sound recording, or did we mean 50-50 on the musical and literary work? Shucks, man. And I don't have a publisher, so now I'm the original publisher of my own work as well. You know, flip. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, the one part of this is like, wow, that's very overwhelming. It's like very overwhelming to think that, like, that's it. But the second part of it is that, like, welcome. Welcome to the world of understanding exactly what value you've created. That of the seven roles that are present in every single sound recording, you may have filled at least one, but most likely, especially in this world of in collabos nowadays, where there's normally just two people. There's normally a beat maker and a vocalist. You know, it's like one of you has probably played more than half of the roles in the two copyrights. You know, and that's overwhelming at first, but the second part of it is that it's actually cool. You know. And you can take solace in the fact that, you know, if you follow the right steps and you start to practice this, you know, the law is on your side, actually, you know. And this is why I'm very evangelical about this part of the thing, you know. Getting to this point here now, where you've understood the basics, you've understood the roles, and you know where the money comes from. In order for that money to flow, you have to be protected. And in order to be protected, you have to be able to have that conversation. And this conversation should be open. It should be honest. You should never, ever have to worry about it. And you need to have that mantra. Like, if you're going into a recording session as a session musician, you need to sit in the mirror and go, I am a session musician today, and the only role that I am playing today is a non-featured artist. If the producer says to me, can you play a cool horn line, or will you please play a beautiful intro for the song, I am going to mandate myself to say to that person, are you asking me to compose? Or are you going to sing to me the line that you want me to play? Okay. If they are asking you to compose, I then tell myself in the mirror, this is what I'm going to say. And you're going to figure out the lines. You're going to figure out that thing, okay? But the bottom line is that conversation shouldn't be tough. And right now it is. It is really tough. In South Africa especially, it's unfair that we can't have the conversation. It's not fair that there's power dynamics. It's not fair that you will walk into a session with a big artist and you will feel insecure about asserting your copyright on something that you've created. It's not fair that that happens. It's not fair that most of the industry barely has access to a computer, you know, let alone being able to draft, you know, being able to draft a songwriter's agreement, you know. Like, so we have to figure out ways that we can get around all these, like, kind of, like, dynamics that make it so difficult, you know. And I mean, the one problem that I have is firstly that we have these power dynamics. I've been in them. I'm sure you've been in them where you feel uncomfortable. You feel like you've been bullied into a position that you might not necessarily feel comfortable with inside. The second part of it is that most of us don't actually know. It's like this information is like, why is this information so scarce? You know, it's like it took me an hour to tell you the basics, and I can guarantee you that like most of you haven't heard this before. I mean, I only started figuring this stuff out like 2 years ago when I was in like a crazy dispute. And I was like, how the fuck am I in a dispute? Like, how am I in this dispute? I'm like, I'm almost 40. Like, I've been in the industry since like I was 18. Like, I'm supposed to know this shit, you know? And then I'm in this dispute, and I'm like figuring out that sound recording and musical and I didn't know this stuff, you know. So I know that it's new information for everybody, and I think that's part of the problem is that this information needs to get out there, you know. The third part that's problematic is that it's awkward because you might expose your own ignorance, you know. We all have that. It's just, you know, I'm gonna open the door for this conversation about songwriting, and what actually I might do is I might actually show this person how little I know about this, and I might suddenly turn myself into like an industry beginner, you know, and that's like scary. It's like super, you know. So that's why I say you have to practice it. You have to mandate yourself that you're just gonna have the conversation. It's not a legal conversation. It's not a legal conversation. It's not a I've got rights conversation. It's simply a thing of like, you know, we're going to collaborate on something and we're going to create copyright together. And it's not possible for you to be protected if I'm not protected. It's not possible for me to be protected if you're not protected. When we're in COVID, I wear a mask to protect you. You know, it's not I wear a mask to protect myself. I'm not trying to get this agreement done. I'm not going to negotiate hectically on splits or anything. I just want to be clear that you've asked me now to create a piano intro, and if this track goes like, if you know, you want this track to be big, and when this track is big, my intro might create a lot of value for this thing. I might have been the one that created the value for this, you know, that you aren't able to create. Like, I'm the one that's able to create that value, and therefore, later down the line, you know, I should be credited. You know, the same thing, like when I was, you know, about the talking in the mirror, you know, like talking to you, like if you're gonna go into a recording session as a backing vocalist, you know, it's like you tell yourself in the mirror that, like, the thing, today I'm a non-featured artist on a sound recording. Until somebody asks me to compose, in which case I will be a composer, I am a non-featured artist. Okay? For Sampra to pay me my royalties that I'm due, they have to know that I'm on this. And the only way that they can know that I'm on this track is if the record label tells them. So when I get to the studio today, I'm just going to have a pleasant conversation, because it costs the record label nothing to do this, you know. All they have to do is just basically send a letter to say, we confirm that James was the backing vocalist on this track. You know what I'm saying? But I can't have that conversation 7 months down the line, you know, because then it's an inconvenience for the whoever it is. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to go and have to sit and go and do all this admin now for something that was released like 7 months ago, and it's like, oh God, you know, whatever. But it's so much easier, like if you're in the session or ahead of the session, you just get an SMS or a WhatsApp from the person, just go, hey man, I'm coming for the session. Just wanted to confirm if this gets released, will you make sure that you notify Sampra that I was a recording artist? Yeah, sure, no problem. Great. Now you've got it in writing. Boom. 3 months later, if they haven't done it, or a week later, or whatever, you know, you can just send them a screenshot. Hey, man, you said to me you'd notify Sampra. Would you mind just going, yeah, here's the link for the notification? Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, you had a question. So you'll need to, sorry, the rules. Jackson.
Hi, guys. So if you're an artist, you've worked with somebody, and they're the ones that are going to register the song, and you're not sure if they did register and said that you were part of the song, can you now go to somewhere and like tell them that I was part of this song, but it's not my song?
Yeah, so that is where it gets tricky. Okay, and this is where we have to get to the next part. We've only had the conversation now. Okay, we now need to protect ourselves. Okay, and when I say protect ourselves, we're not protecting ourselves, we're protecting ourselves and others, okay? And this is the crux, I think, of everything that I feel about this part of the industry, is that if we can change the conversation, or if we can change the attitude to stopping protecting ourselves but protecting the work instead, okay? So we've created something of value, we've created this work, okay? And instead of trying to consider that we want to protect ourselves, that we make sure that the work is protected, okay? We will end up in a better future for that work, okay? And this, what I mean by that is, to answer your question, is that without a doubt, and I have been finding this in my journey, which is, I mean, I'm in the middle of this journey of getting these little W's like every week, of like the new something new that's something new that I've conquered at Samra or at Sambra, you know. And without a doubt, the best way to notify to Samra is as to notify to each of these organizations is as a group. So what I mean by that is to try and create an environment where if you've created this song, that all of the rights holders notify together as a team in their own manner at the same time. The reason why is that currently speaking, at these organizations, there are real people that are handling these notifications. You know what I mean? Even if you do through the portal, like it's a mess, and it always comes down to real people on the other side. Okay, and why I said, for instance, the portal is problematic for me, because you know, if there's an inconsistency between two people, you'll end up with it going into a black hole. Nobody ever gets told that there's a problem with the notification. You just don't. It just, the money hits that handbrake, and the money doesn't flow. So, like a really good. What I've found in my personal experience is that the manual notifications, printed out, handwritten, that the same thing is on every single notification. The same splits, the same song titles, the same alternative title, the same duration, you know, that as a team you decide who's going to handle this, boom, we do all those things, we all sign those documents, and then we send them in, CCing all the people. Okay, so all the composers all send the exact same notification in the same email chain, CCing all of the emails, like stating in that email for the relation numbers, for James, the relation number 276, for more, for this number, please find attached this notification. Okay, it's you might think it's a little bit extra work, okay, but that thing goes into the system. And it gets processed almost immediately. Okay, the notification. What happens with the portal is exactly what you just said. You know, I don't know if the other person notified or not. I don't even know if they notified correctly. And I don't want to be the dose that keeps phoning them to say, "Hey man, did you notify? Did you notify? Did you get on the portal now? Did you get on the portal? Have you got? Oh man, I don't have my Samra number." Da-da-da. You know, if you just have the manual notifications ready. So that everybody together can just meet once, boom, you do it, email, CC everybody in. Like, I've been through that process, and I know that it feels like it's more cumbersome, but actually it's easier. When you send that email off, it's almost like I now feel like, oh, yeah, this is gonna work, you know. I have one track that I released. It was the artist released it in 2009. I have been trying to notify for it for about 4 years. The song was released in 2009. I tried to become a member in 2009, thought I was, and I wasn't. Okay, I thought I was, and didn't follow up, and it turned out that there was a document that was missing that nobody told me about. I then followed up again in 2016. Same thing. I sent my smart card through, and then found out a year later that I was supposed to send the back of the smart card as well. I think you all know this. I mean, the problem, the thing with Samra is, like, specifically Samra, is that like it's something you always put off to tomorrow because it's so cumbersome to phone them. It's so like, you've got to, there's so much energy that's involved in like trying to follow up on this thing, you know, and you get so little back, you know, because there are these four people that are like, they have to deal with everybody's problems, you know, and so you'll get like, you know, can you phone me back in 3 days and I'll go and double check. I mean, do you need 3 days to check, like, if you've received the back of my smart card, you know? Like, and everybody has the same feeling inside, you know? Anyway, my journey was that basically, I started in 2009, I was eventually only registered in 2017, and then it took me about 4 years, it took me until about a month ago to get this one song registered. That song alone was worth, I was able to calculate there was, it had generated about 110,000 rands worth of royalties, of which only 3,000 is available to me. Because it's run out of, because they have time limits on when you can collect. Yeah. So and that song is a very specific example of the only time, and that song I think had been notified. We had re-notified 6-7 times, you know. I mean, the first notification was like back in 2009, 2010. Nobody ever told us why. Nobody ever said that it wasn't that this notification was inconsistent with that one. The only time, having gone through all the various work, I mean, there's also a digital. There's a thing called a CWR, which is a digital submission notification, and still we didn't get paid. Submitted it. Went back to all the rights holders. I was like, guys, we've lost so much money. Let's just try and get whatever we can out of this thing. Manual notifications, scanned them in, sent them all, CC'd everybody in, boom, 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 like that. A couple of days later, song's notified, submitted the report on the playing, and got an email saying, thank you very much, we agree with your report. The amount that you said is correct, you'll get paid at the next royalty payout. Yeah. So that is a very long way of saying that I believe that the only way to properly notify and to properly protect the work, to protect yourself, is to not think about protecting yourself, but to think about protecting the work. So every time you're involved in the work, you want to make sure that the work is protected. What dispute could arise from the work? Well, who owns a sound recording? Great. We need to, in order to have the, well, actually, let me talk about that. So basically, in order to be protected as the record label, you want to have agreements with the people with all the recording artists in some way. You want to have some sort of proof. Hey man, not phoning them to say that, you know, would you want to come and collaborate, but sending a WhatsApp to the artist, sending a WhatsApp to the producer, something that you've got, the screenshot of something that says that I was the first person to start the process of putting the sound recording together. The next part of it is that if you have paid somebody, somebody asked about getting paid on a work, if somebody has been paid on the sound recording, it is automatic that the owner of the sound recording is the person that paid. Doesn't matter if it's 5 rand, 10 rand. If you appear on a sound recording and I pay you for that thing, it is immediate that I'm the owner of the sound recording. Okay, so an invoice to that person, an invoice from that person, or proof that you've paid that person, an invoice for a recording on, you know, where the line item says recording on this track, you know, is another part of the proof. But you need some sort of either agreement or proof between yourself and the producer, between yourself and the featured artist, between yourself and the session musicians, and you should tick those boxes every single time. What proof do I have that I was the person that got them to engage with me on this thing? Okay. In terms of the notifications, as proof, you would then, but it's not recorded. It hasn't been released yet.
Yeah.
There's only a musical work then.
And the producer comes and says, look, I want to work on this track with you. He initiated the conversation. What then?
Well, if he's the producer that wants to produce the track, if he's going to pay you to record it, then he's the owner of the sound recording. Doesn't matter. Who's taking the risk? Who's the person that's taking the risk? He's the one that's taking the risk. You're the one that's sitting. You haven't invested a single piece of time. He's the one that's coming to you saying, "Hey man, I want to invest in this thing. I want to take the risk on this track. I want to release the track. Will you come and feature it? It's a great song. You've done a great job in composing and creating a copyrighted musical and literary work. Let's talk about the sound recording. Did that answer make sense? Cool.
So I'd like to know, how do we negotiate payment kind of thing? Say, you and I are going to be working on the song, you're the producer, I'm the writer, we have a sessionist, whatever. How do we negotiate the percentages of the money that's going to be distributed from the royalties?
Yeah. Well, so then, so you basically, like we say, the owner of the sound recording is the person that's going to receive all the money, okay? So in your case, this beat maker has come, they've said they want to produce the track, they're going to add. What's going to happen is if they add their beat, if they go and create a beat, then you are creating a new musical work, remember, because that person is creating something new as well. So the combination of what you've created and his is going to be ultimately it's going to end up in a new musical work as well that you need to be aware of. You might say up front, like, I don't care what you bring, like, you know, my musical work is my own, you know, and you find a way to negotiate that. But this is something you have to do up front. You know what I mean? Like, in the same way that if I want to put a poet's words to set music, I need that poet's permission.
Just to add a spin on it, right? Yeah. So they come to you, they talk to you about the song, they compose a different beat, and then you pay them.
Yeah, so you're not paying them for the musical work. You're paying them for the beat. The beat is a sound recording. The beat is a sound recording with a musical work attached to it, okay? But when you buy a beat from a producer, you would generally pay them for the sound recording. And in most of those agreements, if you're talking about, like, when you buy a beat from, like, whatever, beatmatic.com or whatever, those will most likely come with an attached addendum that says any new musical work, they would claim 50% of any new musical work. Okay, so you would need to, that would need to be a part of the agreement, is that if you've written the top line on something and you're buying a beat from somebody else, or you're buying a beat and you're writing on their beat, okay, you have not bought their musical work. Remember what I said earlier on, you can't commission somebody out of a musical work. You know, you can only buy the sound recording, okay, the thing that they've created. So there has to be an agreement between whoever has created the new top line, whoever has added anything new, and the beat maker, because they're a composer. And I've made a very big allusion to this early on, that the producer is not the beat maker. And in fact, in this case, the beat maker is not the producer, because the beat maker has sold the beat and may never ever be involved in the recording again. Somebody else might take, you might go and get it mixed by somebody else, and you eventually take on the role of the producer in that case, you know. But whatever happens, that person has created something. They have to be included in some way, and you have to have the understanding to have the conversation to protect, you know, so that's. And remember what I said, you're not protecting him, you're just protecting the work. You want to make sure that there's no, the work is protected, because if the work is protected, you can't have disputes, you know. And if you protect the work, it forces you and everybody else to be honest about what happened on the work. You know what I mean? Because it is, somebody is setting themselves up. If you go and say to Sampra, I was the featured artist and the producer and the session musician, and you don't credit that guy, you know, it's just a matter of time, man. You know, it's a matter of time and you being adverse to that guy, you know, like, because they did something. It's the same thing with the composition and the same thing, I mean, like, Jerusalem, you know, it's just a classic case of, like, you know, if you just focused on protecting the work, you know, and making sure that all the rights holders on the work are credited appropriately and correctly, and you check that, like, all the, you know, all the right things are in place to protect the work, you know, it's not possible to have a dispute. So if there is for a record label to be fully protected, they need to have an agreement between the session musician, between the producer, between the featured artist, and they must have submitted notifications to Sampra, as well as having correct cue sheet information that they distribute to the radio stations. Okay, because 5FM is going to say we played Ngege Balunge, which is owned by Kalawa Jazmi, which features Mafikizolo and has got perhaps Mondli as the producer on that track, you know, and Sampra then receives that information, and that correlates exactly to the information that the record label and Mondly and Mafikizolo all submitted to Sampra. And if that entire loop is perfect, money flows. You know what I mean? So if you protect the work and not the people, the money will flow like far quicker. And if you don't protect the work, you are playing a waiting game until there's an issue. Because it's not, like, if you don't protect the work properly, you should hope that your song is not a hit, okay? Because Open Mic and Master KG and them, I'm sure, based on what I've seen on Thing, and it's just, between all of them, a lot of money has flowed to lawyers that should have flowed to them. And even if a lot of money flowed to Master KG, he's probably lost most of it, you know? And I'm not saying he did it, like, I'm not saying his notification or whoever, I don't know who's right or wrong in that whole thing. I'm just saying that because there was a wrong notification or a wrong, you know, the wrong documentation is floating around, you know, there's a lot of money that's now changed hands, and much of it has gone to lawyers and not to the people who created it, you know. So, yeah.
So I just have a quick question around, if you have a beat maker and a musician, and the beat maker gives the beat, but you don't pay for it because you don't have money. There's no like physical money transactions that are happening.
Yeah.
What is the best way to structure a deal like that? So for instance, let's say the song then does become a hit, right? And there was no original money that kind of exchanged hands. Is it that it's better to have like an agreement, like an IOU, that the artist who requested the beat says, when I start making money, I'll pay you hypothetically $5,000 for your beat, plus you get the splits, your royalty splits for the composite. Like, what is the best way to deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, there are 100 ways that it can flow. And I think what the most important thing is not about what the agreement is, but that an agreement has taken place and that it is somehow reduced to writing. You know, that I mean, exactly like what you said. It's if you think the best route is that, you know, when I start earning you, like, I think that you know, I'd like to buy this beat from you, and I appreciate that, you know, the fee for this would be $5,000, you know. Can I pay you, or would you be okay if I paid you off from sales? And if the producer agrees to that and you just write it down, fine. I mean, then you have to do that then, you know. I mean, another option would rather be to say, well, look, I can't afford it. I can't afford the beat, but how about I give you like 10% of the thing, or how about we go 50-50 or 40, whatever, you know. Like, as long as it's reduced to writing, that is a producer's agreement, you know. You know, and I mean, in this one, it's actually an assignment of copyright, because he's got a beat. If you're buying a beat from him, you know, you're not asking him to do work. The work is already done. He's sitting with a property, a copyright, and he is assigning the copyright to you based on whatever the agreement is. It could be like, you know, instead of $5,000, I'm going to pay you $5,000 a month for the next 10 months, or I'm going to pay you from the sales, or I'm going to pay, whatever it is, as long as it's agreed to in writing, you know, that is the implicit proof that you need that the copyright has changed hands and therefore you are the owner of the sound recording. You know what I mean? You certainly, by doing something verbal with them and then going and releasing the track and then it becoming a hit, I mean, you know, that's where problems arise. Yes, you wanted to ask?
Hi, it's Taryn. I just wanted to just make that clear. For instance, when the beat was made and there wasn't really an agreement, but it was given to you, you then go to Samro and register your song and whatnot. Mm. You then include the beat maker and give him 10%, 20%, 30%.
No.
You can't
decide what his fee is.
What his fee is.
And remember, that's not that you're talking about his copy, his musical copyright. You can't dictate what his copyright, what percentage his copyright is. That has to be in an agreement.
Okay.
You don't get to say to somebody else what the value of their input was, because they might have a very different. Nomcebo might think that if she goes to Samra and says, yeah, well, I wrote Jerusalem, I get 80%, and Master KG goes, hey man, I did the beat for Jerusalem, I get 80%. Who's right?
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
You don't get to decide what the figures are. Okay. If there are people that are involved in the creation of the musical work. Now remember, the sound recording is different. So the copyright in the sound recording is not based. There's no consensus about it. The sound recording is the person that made the arrangements or the person that organized for it to happen. That's why a record label is a record label. You go into a record label deal and they give you an advance because they are the ones that are taking the risk. They are the ones that are saying, here's 50 grand, now go and record me an album. You know, they own the masters because of that. You didn't have the 50 grand. You didn't have the time. You didn't have the money. You didn't have the resources to do anything. The only thing you had was a dream, you know. Like that's why the record label owns the masters, and that's why the law protects the owner of the sound recording that way. But the creation of musical and literary work is very, very different, because nobody can say what we are going to create. With a sound recording, we know what we're going to create. I know I'm going to have the singer. I know that I'm going to have these BVs. I know that I'm going to have those horns, and I know that there's a plan for how I'm going to release it. When you and I go and write a song together today, we have no idea what's going to happen in that room, you know. And we can go in with an agreement. We can go in with a gentleman's agreement or like an unwritten agreement saying, look, we're going to go 50-50 on this, you know. And at the end of the end, a good way to finalize that would be at the end of the day to go, are you still comfortable with 50-50, you know? And to be honest, I know from my experience, having been through disputes and having been through really great collaborations as well, is that when the conversation is open and free flowing, most of the time you find that people are way more generous and are way more open to the collaborations being considered splits, being considered equal when you're there in the room together, you know. Because normally what will happen is, even if I only wrote like a couple of chords and you did all the music, you did all the melody and all the lyrics, there's like, in most instances, you'll probably find that both parties are actually happy with a 50-50, because we both were there. Like the energy, you know, it's possible that you couldn't have written what you wrote without me being in the room right next to you and all that stuff, you know. So like, it's just, that's why I say that conversation element is so important, you know. Yeah. So now, for the record label to be protected, you need that. And in reverse, for the producer and the featured artist and the non-featured artist, you want to have the same thing in reverse. You know what I mean? So while I'm, as the record label, as the owner of the sound recording, want to ensure that I want to be, that I'm credited, or that I'm protected as the owner of the sound recording, I also want, if I'm the producer or the featured artist or a session musician, I also want to make sure that I'm protected, that I have something that states I was the session musician on that track, you know. So the most basic part of that, again, just a screenshot on WhatsApp, you know, just to confirm that I'm coming into session today, da, 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 and will you, you know, like, you know, I think you said that the fee was 1.5. Will you just confirm that? And then I just need one more piece of confirmation from you. Is will you just make sure that I'm credited, like, as a musician on the track, if there's an opportunity to credit me? And also, will you notify Sampra on my behalf? I will notify Sampra on my behalf, but I also need you to send them proof that I was on the track. And you get the yes on a WhatsApp, and you screenshot that thing, and you go and frame it. If you're doing a big track with, like, you know, Stevie Wonder or something, you know. But basically you want to just make sure that there's some sort of written proof. The most watertight extension of this is a proper session musician agreement, a proper producer agreement, a proper featured artist agreement that includes royalties and sales and all that. You know, like, the agreements will go down to, like, you know, if we sell more than 1 million copies, then you get this percentage and that percentage and stuff like that. And that stuff's good, but don't think that if you don't have that, there isn't another way to make sure that you've got proof of that. The same thing with you know, if you're a featured artist or somebody, like, let's say a beat maker wants to get you on, and you know, and you're gonna do the session for free, and there's an implicit understanding it's 50-50. You know, like we talk about, you know, do you want to go 50-50 on a track with me? You know, the beat maker has invited you, like, you get to say to him, look, you're gonna own the sound recording, boom, not on WhatsApp, not verbally, okay? Or you discuss it verbally first, you know, but you just confirm it in writing on WhatsApp, you know, somewhere, just to say, you know, like, thanks for the offer, I really want to do this, can we just confirm, like, you're going to own the sound recording, you're going to release the track, I'm going to be credited as this, and you are going to credit Sampra with me as a featured artist, and like we said, 50% of all the sales, 50% of any money that comes in from this for this track will come to me. Boom. When they say yes, you've got it. You know, you've got that. You've got the start of it. You know, of course, signed agreements, all that stuff. You're gonna start getting into the game where that stuff is really, really important. You know, but to get there, like just to, you know, what I want to caution against is thinking that the only time that I'm ever gonna get agreements is one day when I'm big and then I'm gonna do proper artist agreements. You know, because you're gonna have 100 tracks that are gonna be in dispute that you should have earned money for, and we are all like. There's money available if you can just get tracks on like, you know, on UJFM, on like, you know, like Midnight on Umklobo, you know, like something somewhere, you know, and you get like, what if it's $1,500 that you earn with the next royalties? I will not turn that down. I would love to get a 1,500 rand bonus from Samra, you know, and that could turn into like 3,000 rand, 4,000 rand, you know, and that's like kind of what I'm so evangelical about is this idea that the music industry is binary. You either like a hit artist with lots of records, and someday when I get there, I'm going to have my record deal and my, you know, and all the proper notification. But until then, I'm going to busk it. You know, like you can make something now. You know, it's possible to make something now. You know, and if you just practice it each week, practice every time you go into session, practice. You know, like it's not. You know, you'll find that it's not difficult, and I can tell you from experience. Like, you know, having that conversation actually becomes like quite, I don't know, empowering. It feels like, you know, so yeah. That's how to protect yourself on the thing in the musical work. The publishers and the composers. This is quite easy. There's only two agreements that are required there, between the publisher and the composer, and that is essentially if you're going to assign the copyright to somebody else, you need a publisher's agreement. There's a lot of times if you're in a publishing agreement with like Sony or Universal, they will own the copyright. There's no ways that they're not going to own the copyright. It's because they don't want to have to deal with they are such a big company. They want to go and license this track. They don't want to have to keep coming to you to say, oh, you know what? I got a call from like, you know, Levi Jeans. Would you, and then wait for you to get the email back to them to say yes, and then back and forth between you two, and then only after 3 weeks then they go back to the clients and say like, oh yeah, cool, you can do it, and then they lose the gig. That's why you assign the copyright to a big publisher, is because they are leveraging their ability to exploit your work on your behalf for a fee on the condition that they own the copyright in the song. Make sense? Cool. So that's the agreement that's required there. Yes. And before you do that, so it is implicit that if you have got proof that you are the songwriter, which is what I'm going to talk about next, if you haven't assigned that copyright to anybody else, you are implicitly the original publisher. So you don't need to actually say that you are the original publisher. You don't need to assign the publishing to yourself. By virtue of the fact that you have signed an agreement between the other writers that firmly states your ownership in the song, you are the copyright owner and the original publisher.
Okay, so what I want to understand is I was caught in a situation where a friend of mine is a publisher but signed with another publisher and wants to sign me. So I want to understand how that dynamic works. Is it best to sign under someone who signed under another publisher, or is it best to kind of like go direct to a big publishing company?
My answer to that and the answer to record deals is the same. Is that if it's not equally beneficial for both parties, I don't think you should do it. So, and what I mean by that is that a start-out musician that gets offered a deal from a major record label, I think should not take that. I don't think you should ever. I don't think any aspiring artist should ever take a major. In fact, I mean, to be honest, in most cases, I would say I don't think an aspiring artist should take any kind of record deal. And I think that they should rather spend their time hustling and owning their own copyright, or hustling and managing and getting used to the various roles that they're playing in every single sound recording that they take, and take control of that rather. And at a later point, when it is definite that it's more like a joint venture instead of the record label taking an exploratory sort of risk on you, when it gets to a point that it's definitely some sort of joint venture, that for me is the time to consider a record deal. And it's exactly the same with publishing. If you're taking the publishing deal because you don't know anything about publishing, don't. You know what I mean? If you don't understand publishing, don't take a publishing deal because you think they are going to sort out the things that you don't know. Because that, to be honest, in South Africa, they probably don't know either. You know, is actually the brutal truth. I don't know your friend at all, but it is crazy, and I'm not for 1 minute saying that I know everything, you know. Although, like, I did get my mails from Samro saying you are right about the notifications. So, like, you know, I feel like I got the cheat code for that one part of it, you know. But in general, I would say I think that, for instance, the things that I'm telling you now is what you're expecting your publisher to do, okay? And it is my position that you should first go through these yourself. You should first go through all these processes yourself and have a very deep understanding of how all of your different roles that you all play work, what is bringing you the most value, what you are, you know, like where you are earning the most money. And then at that point, you can focus on that stuff, and then you're not tied in these weird deals, you know? In the case of the thing when he said he's published to somebody else, what's likely happening there is that he's probably got a royalty publishing deal or an admin publishing deal with somebody else. So, like, he would collect works that he exploits, so he wants to get, like, 50 beats from this person, and he's setting up these writers, and he's putting them together, and he's administering this, and then he's got somebody else who's, like, you know, the minion that's going out to go and collect all the money. But like I said, if it's not notified correctly, what money they're collecting? They're taking 10% of nothing, because it's not notified correctly anyway. And the only person that can really do that is you. You know what I mean? I've been through this with publishers. I've been through this with majors. I've been through this with, like, overseas publishers. I've been through publishers here. Like, nobody, like, the only person that has ever gotten my publishing right is me. And it's from getting on the phone, it's from learning, and from getting my own relationship with the people at Samro. Like I said, Daisy, Nokaya, Mturetsi, Bobo, you know? It's like there's Kutlano at Sampra. Like, there's, you know, like, it's like the only time that I've ever gotten, like, closer to the goal has been when I'm the person that's managing it. And I promise you, I feel it's like, you know, what's this publisher going to know about, like, what you co-wrote with somebody else over here, and who the session musician was on that thing? They're just waiting for the documents anyway. And if you're going to have to go through all the schlep of putting the documents together, why don't you just notify anyway? Then you can collect the money, you know?
I may have a stupid question.
There's no stupid question.
What is publishing? There's, like, my understanding of publishing is sync deals and things like that, but what is publishing exactly?
So, there are two parts to the word publishing. Okay, so firstly, publishing only relates to the musical and literary work. You don't publish a sound recording. You can't publish a track. Okay, so if you ever hear about that, walk away from that person. Okay, like, if somebody tells you, like, yeah, let me be your publisher, I'll release your track for you, you're walking into a minefield. Okay, So the first part of publishing is that the publisher is the owner of the copyright, okay? The owner of the copyright in the musical and sound recording. So what I said, when you are the composer or the lyricist and you haven't assigned the copyright to anybody, you are the publisher, because by nature of the fact, a publisher is the person that exploits that copyright, okay? So the answer to that question is, firstly, that at its root, publishing specifically just refers to managing, owning, exploiting, monetizing the copyright in the musical and literary work. The second part of it is that you will have, and it's an unfortunate part of the words that we have, like performance royalties for composers is a stupid word. It should be just composers' royalties, but it's not. In the same way, and you have such a thing as a royalty publisher and an admin publisher, okay? And those, when you hear admin publisher or royalty publisher, that person is specifically not the owner of the copyrights of the musical and literary work. They are simply licensed, or they've simply been given the license or the permission by the owner of the publisher to facilitate one of the publishing duties, which is to go and collect on your behalf, okay? Or it may be to fulfill another function of publishing, which is to exploit the work. So they might say, well, actually, we'll give you, we have an admin publisher, a royalty publisher over here, but maybe what they are doing is going to go and license the work because they've got contacts in Kazakhstan, you know. So you might assign a sort of a publishing license of some sort to somebody in which copyright actually isn't transferred. It's just that they are acting on behalf of that copyright in some sort of license exclusivity of some sort. And that's, yeah, like I say, it's tricky because the most important word is what we call the original publisher. If you've ever heard that word, the original publisher is the person that owns the copyright, whether it's the songwriter themselves, or if you are in a 3-year publishing deal with Sony, then anything you write in that period immediately becomes their copyright. You know, that's why I say, like, you know, the vibe with like Sony and, or not Sony, the vibe with majors. I don't have a position on the value of majors. I only have the position on the value of independent people. You know, and when to give your value away. You know, and that is the truth of that is, for instance, you don't know how big your songs are going to be in 3 years, so I'd be very cautious to say, like, anything I write in the next 3 years, somebody else is going to own the copyright, you know, is going to own the copyright of, you know, and based on some power dynamic in which you have been told that you are not good enough to exploit your own works or manage your own works, you know, and it is my position that over the course of 3 years, you would bring yourself more value than sending all your works into a big pot kettle of, you know, of 100,000 other works that this major is trying to, you know, trying to work. They've now got 100,000 works and they're trying to bring value to all of those people. When I personally believe, if you know, your 10 works, you would probably earn more money. You would probably get more money by learning how to go and sell it yourself, and then trying to get a major. And again, very different. If you have gotten to a point where you are like, you have now a catalog of 30 songs that is big, you know, that's out there, and then a major comes to you and says, hey, we want to publish you, then you can negotiate better, you've got more experience, you know where your value lies, you know what you do better, you've got a much better like opportunity to negotiate harder and also to demand more of whoever it is that you're going into a publishing deal with, that you can, you know, that, like I said, if it feels like a joint venture, it's right. If it feels like you need the break, it's wrong. That's how I feel about it. Now, the final part of this thing is on the musical and literary work, to protect yourself, to have that work protected, is for the publisher to have the publishing agreement, and also to notify, to make sure that SAMRO is notified, okay, and Capasso. Sorry, I don't know if Capasso's in here. Yeah, Capasso as well. And then for the actual ownership of the song, the percentage of the song, and I think this is what you might have been alluding to earlier on, is that there needs to be an agreement between the people who created this copyright. Okay, so it could be that the poet has come and joined in this thing, or that the beat maker has come in, and then there's a songwriter on top. Though, or anybody that has created anything from the, if somebody did the, and there was somebody who, there was just the trumpeter who was messing around in the session, you know, like, or what's that opening of Indolent Leila? You know, somebody created that. The creators of their copyrights need to agree in writing what the splits were, and these are the people that created their copyright, and that is how you protect that part of the work.